I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views.
Parallax is you observe an object, you see a change, but that change is not really a change in the object, but just a change in how you relate to the object in your perspective of the object.
Welcome to the testing room of the Parallax Corporation's Division of Human Engineering.
Now please cross the chair. And you will sit down. Make yourself comfortable. And be sure to place each one of your hands on the box on either side of the chair. Making sure that each one of your fingers is on one of the white rectangles. Just sit back. Nothing is required of you except to observe the materials that are presented to you. Be sure to keep your fingers on the box at all times. Alright? Hope you find the test a pleasant experience.
On this edition of Parallax Views, I'll be speaking with Danny Fuentes of the Lethal Amounts Gallery concerning the pledge drive for his upcoming documentary, Spiritual Cramp, on the goth rock slash death rock icon, Roz Williams, and his controversial band, Christian Death. Danny Fuentes from Lethal Amounts, welcome to Parallax Views.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good, good. So I wanted to have you on to talk about your Roz Williams documentary that you're doing a pledge drive for. For my listeners who may not be familiar with Roz Williams and Christian Death, could you give us a brief rundown of who Roz was and his band?
Yeah, Christian Death, you know, is a California band that came out of the sort of ashes of punk, maybe the beginning of hardcore. And, you know, they're one of the bands that are credited for, you know, I guess starting the sort of subculture genre of like gothic music, death rock. I don't necessarily think that they gave themselves that title, but they certainly fall under that moniker, you know. And, you know, I think they just kind of did a lot of stuff before anybody else, and a lot of people later on went and imitated or were very influenced by them.
Yeah, and Roz started the band very early. I think he was in his teens when he started it.
Yeah, he started off in a band called the Asexuals, which was more of like a punk band. And that, you know, I believe he was like 15 or 16. And then at about 17, he started Christian Death. And that's when he really kind of honed in on something more unique and really tapping into something more personal.
And he was very well known for like this androgynous fashion sense. And Christian Death was a very different band. How did they stand out from the rest of the California punk scene?
You know, to me, when you line all the bands that were around, everything from DI, Adolescence, Social Distortion, Black Flag, all that stuff, all the top tier SoCal, you know, quintessential bands, you know, they all look like, you know, California punk kids, you know, what you would imagine, you know, the biker boots and the bandanas wrapped around, you know, their waist and all that. But then you look at Christian Death and they're in all black, wearing wedding dresses and lace and veils and, you know, it was a totally different imagery. You know, it really stood out, especially with the contrast of sunny California. You know, a lot of the bands that were playing more with that imagery were out of the UK, and they just kind of really loudly stood out.
Yeah, yeah, and to me, the album that like is probably most iconic with Christian Death is Only Theater of Pain. What was it about this album that like just shot things off for Roz Williams and his band?
I think they were, you know, purposely trying to stand out. I don't think they were trying to do what everybody else was doing. In fact, it was probably more reactionary to what was going on. Everyone was starting to imitate themselves, and, you know, the punk that was supposed to be undefinable was becoming a category and easy to, you know, pinpoint and describe. So as a reaction to that, they wanted to do something that was really out there and undefinable, uncategorizable. You know, the guitars are a lot more heavy and just experimental. You know, he's doing a lot of slide on the guitar, and it almost sounds like Black Sabbath. It's like really drudgy and heavy. And then the vocals are, you know, they're very theatrical, very dramatic. In fact, a lot of people kind of have a hard time getting into Christian Death right off the bat because the vocals are so dramatic and, you know, really just like sleazy kind of sounding. But yeah, you know, their sound was very unique. I don't think anybody else was doing that, gothic, post-punk, or punk. It was just very – there was nothing else going on that sounded similar to it.
Yeah, there's even like some psychedelic overtones on the first album. It's crazy.
Very much so. The more that, you know, we've dived into this documentary and interviewed people, asked questions, the more I realized they were really trying to be more of a, yeah, just experimental and psychedelic, and the influences that they were quoting was not what I had expected, but it makes sense. You know, they were really influenced by Throbbing Gristle. That's what really kind of turned them on to, like, there's more than just the obvious stuff like David Bowie, and, you know, they were highly influenced by the Germs and things of that nature. As soon as they heard Throbbing Gristle, they were just like, oh man, there's a world that we haven't tapped into. So you could hear that, I think, now when you kind of listen to it, knowing that they were listening to stuff like that, you're like, all right, I hear it.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Throbbing Gristle. I saw that Throbbing Gristle's vocalist, Genesis P. Orridge, is actually in the documentary.
Yeah, so in learning about where their influences were coming from, I found it surprising but amazing that they were highly influenced by Throbbing Gristle and just Genesis P. Orridge. And it makes sense because, you know, Roz was really into experimental music, and it, you know, his side project of the same, you know, time as Christian Death was Premature Ejaculation, which is honestly pretty similar to bands like Throbbing Gristle. And so, you know, I asked Jen, Lethal Mouse is an art gallery first and foremost, so we did an exhibit on the artwork of Psychic TV, Jen's other band. So we were working on an exhibit with Genesis about Psychic TV's graphic design and artwork. And in working on that, I asked him if he recalled performing with Christian Death or anything about Roz Williams. And she said that she did. They probably performed once or twice, and she'd have to like kind of think back on it and kind of go through her journals or however she goes about doing that. And she came back to me and said, yes, I remember a lot. Actually, we played a show in France. I'd love to do the interview. And I let him know, were you aware that you were such an influence on Christian Death? And he's like, I had no idea. I'm not entirely sure if I hear it. And I, you know, we kind of went through it. I played him some of the stuff, and he's like, I could totally see why that would be. He's like, huh, it's really, I had no idea. He's a really bashful guy. He never really brought anything up to me. And it was interesting to kind of give him a little bit of history on himself and who's he's influenced, not knowing after 30 years. So yeah, that's why we included Jen. She was very happy to be a part of it.
Yeah, that's really cool. Another person that I knew you would have to get an interview for the documentary is the SoCal punk guitarist. He's a legend, Rick Agnew of the Adolescents, who worked with Christian Death.
Yeah, definitely. You know, he's a big part of the storyline. You know, I think once he joined the band, that's when the band really came up with that sound, that very unique, you know, heavy guitar driven sound. We've worked with Rick quite a bit on different things relating to Christian Death and beyond. So he was definitely up for it. You know, he's a big part of the story, and we want to focus a lot on the early formative years, mostly because I think the interesting part is that it was a punk band that really wasn't doing anything like the other bands at the time. So hearing his perspective and why he joined the band and how it all came to be was very interesting.
Yeah, and getting back to the whole issue of how they were different from any other band at the time, in one of the press releases I saw promoting the pledge drive, it talked about how Christian Death's live shows blurred the lines between art and shock. Could you get into that a little bit more, what their live shows were like from what you've researched?
Yeah, I mean, my interpretation of it is, you know, Roz Williams probably felt pretty alienated in this, you know, subculture, punk scene, you know, being a gay man and dressing very androgynous. You know, I think that was his way of saying, like, I'm not like you, and I'm okay with that. But at the same time, understanding that there might be conflict with that. So I think his performance art, infusing performance art into a punk band was his way of sort of arming himself and saying, like, you know, don't fuck with me. I'm crazier than you are. I have much less to lose. You know, he was suffering from depression and stuff like that. So I think it was all cathartic. It was all about, like, getting these demons out. And so he included a lot of that. You know, he would break, you know, statues of, you know, the crucifix, and, you know, they'd crucify dead, a roadkill, and Ron Athey was a part of the performances, and he would, like, eat the cat body and vomit it, and they'd crucify Roz Williams on stage and whip him and cut him. And yeah, there was shock and awe to it, but I really do think that it was more in a sophisticated way. It wasn't quite as, even though I totally respect Plasmatics and Wendell Williams, there's a little bit more of like a, there's a fun, crazy attitude to stuff like Plasmatics. And I think this, the Christian Death, was a lot more about showing fearlessness and just being a threat, you know. And Plasmatics, of course, were the same, but it's just a different tone.
Yeah, yeah. And those live shows with Ron Athey, I believe that was, I don't know if he was in Christian Death, that was Premature Ejaculation, right?
Yeah, so the Ron Athey and Roz Williams dated, and they found each other very early on in Christian Death. So, you know, he describes himself as the good girlfriend that would always be there and be willing to participate in any, you know, weird performances that they wanted to come up with. But yeah, he wasn't technically in the band. He was there for the recording. He was there for the practice sessions. I would say he was highly influential on the imagery. He was a lot more, you know, when two people like that meet and they tend to feed off of each other and push each other to do more and be a little bit wilder. And so he was a big part of why they kind of went above and beyond. So he technically is like an unofficial member, I would say. But yeah, then they started doing Premature Ejaculation, which was really satisfying, a little bit more of a intense, you know, conceptual art that they both had in them.
Yeah, yeah. I really like his a lot of people don't know about Roz's artwork. He actually did like I believe art collages and whatnot. And there was just a book on that released, The Art of Roz Williams. So I don't know if that's covered in the documentary at all.
Yeah, we'll be tapping into all of that. You know, I think Christian Death and Roz Williams' life in general was one big art project. You know, and I think that's something that has to be analyzed, you know, from the lyrics and the manner that he wrote them to, you know, all the album cover art. Most of it is his, you know, the only theater paint is his pencil sketch. You know, there's a lot of layers to it, and I think he just never stopped creating. You know, a lot of the art, the collage art that's pretty well known now and really coveted, they were like doodles, basically. You know, his roommates would be like, yeah, that one piece that sold for thousands of dollars was actually underneath our bathroom scale that was made of glass. You know, we didn't really considered art, it's decorations. So it was something I was always doing, like constantly creating, regardless of the medium. Like he was a true and true artist.
Well, I was gonna ask too, is there anyone else that's become involved in the documentary that you can tell us about that's, you know, wasn't featured in the trailer? Or
yeah, a lot of people have you know, come forth lately, you know, expressing their interest in the documentary, how important it is and how it affected their life. And, you know, if it wasn't for a band like Christian Death or somebody like Roz Williams, they might have not gone down that path. You know, I think that's what's really important about somebody like Roz Williams, is that he, you know, he was one of those characters that was brave enough to do it his way and inspired a lot of people, just in the sense of like hope, I think, for a lot of gay men and, you know, young confused kids of the 80s, that, you know, there wasn't that safety net of a community or resources for mental health, or there just wasn't even phrases to help some of these people that don't fall into the category of gay or straight. You know, now there's a lot of that, but, you know, people like Anoni, previously Anthony and the Johnsons, she's one of the ones that came forth and really wants to be a part of it, which is very important, because I think that's a dialogue we're trying to create with the documentary, is that, you know, aside from Christian Death being very influential as a musical project, you know, Roz Williams as a personality and as a figure, whether he was intentionally trying, and I don't think he was, he ended up influencing a lot of young gay people that really didn't have somebody to look up to. you know, when you look at people like David Bowie or Mark Bolan and stuff like that, they play around with androgyny and, you know, they create this sort of safe allure for people that, you know, are looking for something like that, some hero, that somebody that it's going to be okay. Look at them. They found success being themselves. But then they're also either, you know, bisexual or just straight men in costume. But then you look at Ross Williams and, you know, he's not spelling it out. He's not saying he's gay. It's not necessary. It's so overtly something else. It's clear as day is like that he's probably not a straight man and not concerned with playing it safe. I think he gave a lot of hope for a lot of people, and I think that's really important to point out. And Noni is one of those that I feel like gotten that kind of inspiration, that kind of feeling from it. You know, I've spoken to a lot of people that really do share that thought. Like, if it wasn't for discovering Christian Death, who knows? Who knows what would have happened to me?
Yeah, so. You can certainly see the influence on even characters like Marilyn Manson and Trent Reznor.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Marilyn Manson, I give him credit for, you know, being in the mainstream, doing what he does. But a lot of the stuff he's done has been a page out of Ross Williams, you know. He put it on a different platform, which is incredible. But Ross Williams did a lot of the same performance art, very similar character, you know. So I definitely feel like those people, you know, have to look at Ross Williams and people like him as like the trailblazers that, you know, push those boundaries so early on that it made it safe for somebody like Marilyn Manson to be ripping pages out of the Bible on MTV and, you know, middle America, you know, completely mainstream. So, yeah, you got to point that out.
Yeah, and I believe Roz, it's kind of interesting you mentioned the Midwest thing, because I think Roz came from a highly Christian family as well.
Yeah, the way people describe the family, they were like one generation out of the Appalachian Mountains. Like, they were very, from my understanding, they were very, you know, kind of simple people, very strict religious background. And, yeah, just very almost Quaker-like, kind of, from what I understand. So, you know, a lot of those things that he grew up witnessing, like the fathers would hunt. The father and the, you know, the brothers would hunt and bring home animals and like hang them out to dry and stuff like that. You know, Rick Agnew talks about it a lot. He's just like, yeah, you'd go into their house and there'd be all these carcasses everywhere. And then you'd go into his room and you're like, oh, there's more carcasses and skeletons. It was something that he was raised around that, like in Christianity and a lot of just death and morbidity was just not really that weird to him. So, you know, you could see the influences from that right away.
So is there anything else before we start wrapping up that you would like my listeners to know they can expect in the documentary?
You know, we're, in the documentary, well, the documentary itself, we're trying to make a full length and really send it to film festivals and make it really something legit. And I want it to be something compelling. It's not supposed to be a fluff piece on like my favorite, you know, death rock band or anything like that. It's supposed to tell a story of, you know, a young man and his spiritual and artistic journey and, you know, where it went down, the road, what road it went down. There's so many layers to Christian Death that I don't want it to just be a rock bio. I don't want it to be a VH1 Behind the Music. There's a heavy story in there. There's somebody that was suffering and he tried his best to work through it through his art. And there's a lot of questions that are unanswered. You know what, you know, he committed suicide and it was so calculated and it felt like there's a lot of mystique even to the way that he decided to go, that it could very well have been his ultimate art piece. We don't necessarily know that for sure, but that's a good question to try and find out.
I've actually been to his Hollywood Forever, the Hollywood Forever Cemetery to see his place there, and it's almost like a huge art piece because he has the poem there, and there's like, you know, he did it on April Fool's Day.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of connections that you know, I don't know if he deliberately left these like little breadcrumbs for us to try and figure out. But there's so many uncanny little details that you can there's dots that can be connected that, you know, if you look, observe at the big picture, you're like, how long was he fantasizing about this? And how much of this was kind of his ultimate goal? You know, it's very, and honestly, is that a bad thing or not? You know, I mean, some people really, you know, they're suffering and they really just want to go, and they want to go on their own terms. And so there's a lot of stuff that's really interesting about that. And it really does make you wonder. And that's what makes a great documentary, leaving you with something to think about.
You have been quoted as saying it was a lifelong dream to do this project. Why was it so personally important to you on that level?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say it was a lifelong dream. That might be a little dramatic, but it's definitely, it's become something that I really feel passionate about. Like, I want to see it follow through, like whether it's something that I have to invest on my own, whatever, you know, pull loans. It's just something I really feel like needs to happen. It needs to be shown. It needs to be talked about. And it needs to happen now. If it doesn't happen, I don't think it will be capable of getting the full story. You know, a lot of these people involved, you know, they haven't been the kindest to their own bodies. And, you know, unfortunately, things happen and people's health deteriorates. So, you know, I want these people to be able to tell their story, their side of the story. There's no better time like the present. So yeah, I just feel very passionate about it. You know, I myself, I'm a gay man, and I came from the punk scene, and I look at Christian Death as one of those bands that, yeah, inspired a little bit of hope in me. You know, you don't have to hide who you are. You just live life. Like, that's all you can really do. You really don't know what's beyond this. So, why hold back? Why suffer through it? You know, you got one chance at doing the best that you can at human experience, and you have to just live however best you can. So to me, it's personal in that sense. You know, I really do feel Roz Williams put that out there for people, whether it was intentional or not. And I think that's the message that he left me anyway. Like, it's okay to be yourself, even if you're fucking weird. Even if nobody will ever understand you, this is life. Like, you have to live it as best as you can. Why shelter? Why hide? Why? It's torture. So I think it was very brave of him to just be himself. And at a time where, you know, he could be killed, beat up. You know, there's so many stories of, like, homophobia and, like, the kids that were just openly gay or a little bit, you know, more effeminate that get murdered. And, I mean, he was wearing wedding dresses to school, from my understanding. So you can't get more, like, out there than that. And he didn't live, like, in the heart of Hollywood or anything like that. He lived in the suburbs. He lived in Pomona. It wasn't, like, a safe environment for him to, like, be behaving like that. So I definitely, you know, this is my way of, like, saying thank you, I suppose. I think he needs the credit that's deserved. So I want to be able to help a little bit in that. I think the band and him just deserve a legitimate documentary. Surprised it hasn't happened, to be honest with you.
Well, me too, and I'm happy you're doing it. I think Roz is an inspirational character. And I just wanted to ask, how can my listeners support the documentary on Pledge Music, and what goodies can they get if they pledge some funds to it?
Yeah, so we're at Pledge Music under Lethal Amounts, or you could look up Spiritual Cramp, which is the title of the documentary so far. I think we're going to stick with it, but yeah, look up Roz Williams documentary, Spiritual Cramp. And, you know, we got a lot of stuff from, you know, a collection of flyers that, you know, I've been put into a zine, to skateboard with, you know, shaped as a coffin with Roz Williams' face on it. A lot of people don't really realize the connection, but, you know, the two members, George, the drummer, and James, came from the California skate scene prior to joining Christian Death. So they were, you know, like, you know, pool skateboard kids, and they joined a goth band. So there's the connection with that. And they're really thrilled to see a skateboard. You know, I think a lot of the skate community of that time embraced all these countercultures. So that's one of the more exciting pieces, in my opinion. But there's a lot of stuff in there. I can't even think off the top of my head. A lot of shirts that will only be available through this, you know, things that are Roz Williams' personal art, put into, you know, a shirt, very ornate, very, very elaborate t-shirts. So I highly suggest trying to get one, even if you're just a collector. It'll go a long way. It'll go towards a good cause. And this is a, you know, this is a pretty heavy undertaking for us to take. So anything will help, really.
Okay, well, thank you again, Danny, for joining me on Parallax Views to talk about Spiritual Cramp, the upcoming Roz Williams documentary.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me. Really appreciate it.
Well, that does it for this edition of Parallax Views. I hope you enjoyed my interview with Danny Fuentes of Lethal Amounts. And I encourage you very much to consider making a donation to Danny's documentary on Roz Williams and Christian death, Spiritual Cramp. And on that note, I think we'll close out the show with that very song by Christian death.
Where the hell?